Hey there, it's Shannon Ballard. If you enjoy Southern Mysteries, you can hear more when you join me on Patreon. As an independent podcast, your support makes it possible for Southern Mysteries to continue. As a thanks for joining, patrons hear ad-free episodes, plus the monthly patron-exclusive podcast, Audacious, Tales of American Crime, featuring scandalous and shocking crimes in American history. And there's more than 60 episodes in the show archives that you can't hear anywhere else. Thanks to my new patrons who are helping make this show possible. Carrie from Pearl, Mississippi, Glenn from Anniston, Alabama, Karen from Bridgewater, Massachusetts, and Rachel, Janet, and Anna, listening from mysterious locations. You can support the show and start listening to all the stories you haven't heard at patreon.com/southernmysteries. Joe Ball had a way with women. He was crude and lacked charm, but in the 1930s, women were drawn to him. Many of these women who fell in love with Joe worked in his rundown tavern in South Texas. That tavern would be referenced as one of the last places several of Joe's lovers were seen before they disappeared. The story of Joe Ball was once considered a tall tale as big as Texas. Some believe Joe was simply folklore. We now know Joe Ball was a real man. The mystery surrounding him is how many people he killed, and whether or not the rumors surrounding how he disposed of his victims are true. Welcome to Southern Mysteries, exploring the history and mysteries of the American South. I'm your host, Shannon Ballard. This is the mystery of the Butcher of Elmendorf. Tobe Hooper's first movie, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, is one of the most successful and influential horror films ever made. He also directed a movie called Eaten Alive. It tells the story of a psychotic motel proprietor who feeds his guest to an alligator he keeps behind the motel. Following the movie's release in 1976, one critic wrote that Eaten Alive was a disturbing film that makes for an uncomfortable watch. A disturbing film that was loosely based on the life of Joe Ball. Most of the crimes associated with Joe were committed in the 1930s. All of the investigators who worked this case have long since died. We know Joe Ball was more than folklore because of Michael Hall of the Austin Chronicle. In 2002, Hall was able to track down some surviving relatives and former associates of Joe Ball to learn more about his life. People who heard stories about Joe for decades learned he was a real man who had a relatively normal childhood and somehow became a very disturbed person. Joe Ball was the son of Frank and Elizabeth Ball. Born in San Antonio, Texas in January 1896, he was one of eight siblings. Frank and Elizabeth were said to be good people who loved their family. In the late 1800s, the Balls moved to Elmendorf, Texas, about 15 miles southeast of San Antonio. Frank opened a cotton factory, and thanks to the railway that ran through town, Frank became a rich man. He invested in real estate and opened a general store. The Balls were respected members of their community, and they were proud to be able to provide everything their eight children needed or wanted. Seven of their children grew into respected adults who held prominent positions in the community. Then, there was Joe. He was a loner as a child, and in his teens, he became obsessed with guns and target practice. As his nephew said in a 2002 interview, Joe could shoot a bird off a telephone line with a pistol from the bumper of his Model A Ford. In 1917, when the United States officially entered the World War in Europe, Joe decided to put his skills to work. He was the first man from Elmendorf to enlist. He served on the front lines and received an honorable discharge from the Army in 1919. When Joe returned to the States, he went to work in his father's store, but in time, he was restless and left the family business. Joe chose a career as a bootlegger. He wanted to earn a lot of money quickly, and he liked the dangerous nature of the bootlegging life. He sold whiskey out of a 50-gallon barrel in his Model A Ford, and the demand was never-ending for that whiskey. Joe needed help. He hired Clifton Willer, a local handyman. Joe Ball was crude and overbearing. Clifton Willer was the kind of man who didn't fight back when Joe began terrorizing him. Joe would get drunk and randomly shoot at Clifton's feet to get him to dance or just mess with his head. He was also known to beat Clifton when he was drunk. But Joe had a hold on Clifton Willer, and he would remain a part of Joe's story until the bitter end. Once Prohibition ended, and there was no longer that demand for whiskey sold out of Joe's car, he bought land just outside of Elmendorf. He built a tavern and called it the Sociable Inn. There was a bar with a player piano up front, and in the back, two bedrooms, Joe's living quarters. Joe liked gimmicks and shocking people, so he brought in cockfighting in the hope that more people would come to the Sociable Inn, which worked for a time. But when business slowed down again, Joe decided he needed a new attraction. He had someone help him dig a hole behind the bar. He cemented and filled the hole with water, then erected a 10-foot-tall fence and filled that pool with alligators. 5 alligators. It was a gamble of a gimmick that paid off. Every weekend, the Sociable Inn was busy with people drinking and wanting to take a look at the gators behind the bar. Joe would wait until spectators filed in around the gator pit, and he would find any animal he could, a raccoon, a cat, or a dog, and throw it to the gators. Every time he did it, the crowd went wild. For some reason, they loved Joe's disturbing show. But they also feared Joe. He was known to everyone in Elmendorf as a disturbed man, which seemed to be a part of his appeal. Crazy Joe's alligator pit drew big crowds and kept the tavern busy. And the fact that Joe only hired the prettiest women in the area to waitress and bartend kept them coming back. The beauty stood out to the men who came to the bar, and many came just to see them, which is why some of those men would ask what happened to a woman when all of a sudden she wasn't at work anymore. When Joe was asked about a woman who suddenly was just gone, he would always say that this woman had worked there to get some quick cash and had moved on to a new town. In 1934, Minnie Goddard, or Big Minnie, as she liked to be called, came into Joe's bar and stuck around. She was known as an overbearing and loathsome person, which Joe Ball liked. They began a relationship, and Minnie helped Joe manage the bar. Not long after Minnie entered the picture, Joe hired a beautiful young waitress named Dolores Goodwin. Dolores fell for Joe, and the feeling was mutual. But when Joe hired 22-year-old Hazel Brown, things at the Sociable Inn got really complicated. Hazel fell for Joe, and he fell in love with her. Joe Ball had three lovers working at his bar until the summer of 1937, when Minnie disappeared. Her family tried to find her, which led them to Joe's tavern. He explained Minnie had left town because she had given birth to a baby out of wedlock. Months later, Dolores Goodwin learned what really happened to Minnie when Dolores married Joe Ball. Within days of their marriage, Joe had been drinking a lot and admitted to Dolores that Minnie didn't have a baby or leave town because he killed her. Now, because Joe was drunk, Dolores assumed he was just making things up, so she left it alone, never mentioned it to the cops or Minnie's family, who were desperately searching for her. In January 1938, Dolores sustained major injuries in a car accident. She was hospitalized, and doctors had to amputate her left arm to save her life. A wild rumor spread across Elmendorf that one of those gators at Joe's Tavern had torn off Dolores' arm. By April of that year, people weren't talking about Dolores' arm anymore. They were focused on what had happened to her. Dolores disappeared. So did Hazel Brown. Three women who worked at Joe's Tavern and had been in a relationship with him disappeared. But Joe moved on. The crowds kept coming to his gator shows, and Joe, who may have had trouble committing to one woman, was completely devoted to those gators. The story goes that a neighbor complained about the smell of rotting meat coming from Joe's gator pit. Without missing a beat, Joe pulled out a gun and told the neighbor to mind his own business and pay no attention to the alligator's food. Joe warned him that if he didn't turn away, he would become alligator food too. The wise neighbor let it go and moved on. Joe had managed to avoid questions from locals about the women who went missing from his tavern, but he began to feel some pressure in the summer of 1938. Minnie's family went to the Bexar County Sheriff's Office and asked them to help find her and the other women from the sociable inn who disappeared. Joe Ball was in a relationship with Minnie when she went missing, so the sheriff questioned him several times. But with no evidence of a crime, Joe wasn't named a suspect. But a few months later, another family came forward to say their loved one was missing. 23-year-old Julia Turner worked part-time at the sociable inn before she suddenly disappeared. Joe was brought in for questioning again, and when asked by the Bexar County Deputy Sheriff if he was involved in this disappearance, Joe said all he knew about Julia was that she had some personal issues, and Joe said she moved on to a new town. With no evidence of a crime, Joe Ball wasn't named a suspect. The sheriff knew something was off, so he ordered a search of the home Julia shared with a roommate. There they found evidence that Joe may have been lying. Joe had said Julia moved on to a new town, but all of her clothes, everything she owned, was still in the home. Investigators went to the sociable inn to question Joe, who suddenly remembered Julia mentioned to him she didn't want to go home because she was fighting with her roommate. He said he gave her $500 to help with her fresh start. It was clear to the sheriff Joe was lying, but he had no evidence to prove Joe's involvement in any crime. Investigators questioned Joe again 2 months later. This round of questioning came after two additional sociable inn employees went missing. But Joe denied any knowledge of what happened to them and maintained his innocence. Joe always claimed it was a coincidence that these women had worked at the sociable inn and had just disappeared. On September 23, 1938, the Bexar County Sheriff's Department got a lead that helped them crack the case. The neighbor who had complained to Joe about the foul smell coming from the gator pit walked into the sheriff's office and reported that after he complained to Joe, he started watching him to see what was really going into that pit. He told the sheriff he saw Joe Ball cut meat off a human body and feed pieces to the alligators. The next day, a man reported to the deputy sheriff that he had seen Joe Ball leave a barrel behind Joe's sister's barn. The man claimed there was a foul smell coming from the barrel, and he could swear it smelled like death. By the time investigators got to the barn, the barrel was gone. But Joe's sister confirmed there had been a barrel there, and she, too, had noticed that foul smell. Two sheriff's deputies headed to the sociable inn. When they walked in, they explained to Joe they were taking him to San Antonio for questioning. Joe asked if they would let him close down the tavern, and the deputies agreed to sit at the bar to wait for Joe. Moments later, Joe walked over to his register and pressed the no sale button. The drawer popped open, and he calmly reached inside for a .45 caliber revolver. He waved it at the deputies, and just as they moved to try to stop him, Joe Ball pointed the gun at his heart and pulled the trigger. The shot was fatal. Bexar County deputies searched Joe's bar and the area surrounding the gator pond, where they found rotting meat surrounding the pond. They also discovered an axe with matted hair and blood. Investigators had one theory about the missing women. Joe killed them and fed them to his alligators. It was their only lead. They had to ask questions and follow the evidence to see if this was true. It was horrific to consider the possibility Joe had disposed of bodies in the gator pit, but Bexar County Deputy Sheriff John Gray was determined to solve the mystery and knew with Joe dead, there was only one person who could help them. Joe's right-hand man, Clifton Wheeler. Deputies brought Clifton in for questioning, and initially, he denied any involvement or knowledge of the whereabouts of the sociable inn employees and former lovers of Joe Ball, who had vanished. Investigators continued to press Clifton for answers, and eventually, he admitted he knew what Joe had done. Clifton Wheeler began to talk, and he started with Joe's girlfriend, Hazel Brown. He explained Hazel fell in love with another man. When Joe learned about this, he felt betrayed and vulnerable because just as he had done with Dolores, he had confessed to Hazel that he murdered many. Clifton said he saw Joe lose it and kill Hazel. Investigators told Clifton they couldn't just take him at his word. They needed physical proof that Hazel was dead. Clifton agreed to cooperate and took investigators to a lonely spot near the San Antonio River. It took him a few minutes to remember the exact spot. Then he asked for a shovel and began digging. Minutes later, the investigators smelled a foul odor. As some of the men present were overpowered by that smell and became physically sick, Clifton Wheeler continued to dig until he pulled up two arms, two legs, and a torso. Clifton explained to a deputy that the head was in the remains of a campfire a few hundred yards away. He led investigators to the area where they found what remained of hazel brown, some teeth, a jawbone, and pieces of a skull. Clifton proved he was telling the truth and explained how he knew where to find Hazel's remains. He told investigators that late one night, a very drunk Joe Ball came to him and ordered him to find some blankets and alcohol and meet him at the car. Joe told Clifton to get in the car and drive him to Joe's sister's barn, where the men picked up a 55-gallon barrel and drove to the area by the river, where investigators had found Hazel's remains. Clifton told police Joe forced him to dig a grave while he held a gun to Clifton's head. Joe forced Clifton to help him open the barrel where Joe had hidden Hazel Brown's body. When Joe told Clifton they had to dismember Hazel's corpse, Clifton refused to do it. Joe started, but was so drunk he couldn't see straight. Joe ordered Clifton at gunpoint to help him. He made Clifton hold down the limbs as Joe sawed them off. When they were done, Joe made Clifton help him burn the head on the campfire and bury the remains. When asked about Minnie Goddard's disappearance, Clifton admitted he knew Joe killed her, and he made Clifton help dispose of her remains. Clifton explained that Joe had found out Minnie was pregnant, and that was a problem for him because he was trying to make things work with his other, younger lover, Dolores. Joe asked Minnie to take a drive with him to a town called Ingleside, near Corpus Christi. He found a secluded spot and pulled out some whiskey. Joe waited until Minnie had a lot to drink and then shot her in the head. Under duress, Clifton helped Joe bury Minnie, and the two drove back to the bar, went back to work as if nothing had happened. On October 14th, 1938, police found Minnie's remains. When asked about the other women who had vanished after working at the sociable inn, Clifton explained he had told them everything he knew. Minnie and Hazel were dead, and he had no idea what happened to the other women. Investigators knew Clifton had nothing left to lose. In the end, they believed he had shared everything he knew about Joe Ball's crimes. Years after Joe took his own life and Clifton revealed Hazel and Minnie's fate, investigators learned what had become of Dolores Goodwin. She had really left Elmendorf to start a new life, far away from Joe. She had been alive and well in California all those years. In 1957, Dolores Goodwin agreed to an interview with a San Antonio Light. She was asked about the rumor that she lost her arm because one of Joe's gators attacked her, and the rumors Joe had killed more women and fed their rotting flesh to his alligators. Dolores responded to the question saying, "Joe never put people in that alligator pit. He wasn't a horrible monster. Joe was a sweet, kind, good man, and he never hurt anybody, unless he was driven to it." The man Dolores described as sweet and kind is the same man who killed at least two women and had that habit of throwing puppies and kittens into a gator pit. We'll never know how many people Joe Ball killed, or what really happened to the rest of the women who disappeared from his tavern and were never seen alive again. Investigators who worked the Joe Ball case and searched his property were convinced at least some of his victims had been fed to his gators. But that has never been proven. It remains a part of the mystery surrounding the butcher of Elmendorf. Southern Mysteries is created and hosted by me, Shannon Ballard. Clifton Wheeler was prosecuted for his role in the aftermath of the murders of Minnie and Hazel. He pled guilty to the unlawful disposal of bodies and served 2 years in prison. Following his release, he tried to open his own bar, wanted to make a fresh start. But Clifton was famous for his association with Joe Ball. No one in Elmendorf made life easy for him. So he left the area and was never seen again. And Joe's alligators? Well, the state of Texas seized them and donated them to the San Antonio Zoo. They became a tourist attraction for people who wanted to catch a glimpse of Joe Ball's gators. You can find sources for this episode and learn more about the show at southernmysteries.com. And remember, if you're liking Southern Mysteries, a great way to support the show is to rate and review Southern Mysteries where you're listening, which helps other people discover it. And you can also join me on Patreon, where you can hear exclusive episodes that aren't available anywhere else. You can learn more and join today at patreon.com/southernmysteries. Thanks so much for listening.